Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the...
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren. Heard on
FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. We got Mr. Dave Martino
in the house.
Side
in the basement of the House of Mystery.
Yeah, you got to be somewhere. You know, are you digging under the house?
I'm digging under the house.
Following that TikTok.
That's right. I saw that and I'm like, I just got to start digging.
Yeah. Wow. Get rid
of it. Wait for the House of Mystery to just implode.
Yeah. I guess sometimes people don't realize what they're doing is they're digging out the foundation and under the house that it kind of makes the house unstable.
Just a little bit.
But nowadays you can do it on TikTok live and people watch you and you'll amass 300,000 plus viewers and they're all entertained and now it starts a trend. Now people are going under their houses and digging.
I can start doing that now.
Yeah, get to work.
Yeah.
And it's just for a storm shelter. I don't know what kind of storm she was expecting.
No.
More than I've seen. I don't know. Maybe I'm living in a good area and no storms.
It's like the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. I don't know. She's waiting for Dorothy to come. strange stuff. Okay, now let's see. Oh, I should also talk about we have the noir at the bar starting. Oh. It already started. Now, first reading edition starts this Thursday, the 25th, I believe it is, and that's on KKNW, 1150 AM Seattle, and it's authors that are reading their work, and they do 8-minute segment of reading, and these are the authors that will be featured in the Left Coast Crime in Seattle this year from April 11th to 14th. So don't miss it.
I won't.
Yeah, you better not. I'm watching. You better. I'm going to test you to make sure that you heard every second. You better pass.
I will.
Well, speaking of tests and passing and everything, we've got a teacher here, and he's going to explain to you how to count.
No, I need that.
Yeah, I know. He's written a new book. Of course, the new book is called Lumpy's Gift, and we're going to find out all about that and about what he's doing to make this a better world. So, Mr. Christopher Packer, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, listen, so you've got quite the history, much more surprising than I would figure. Now, before this Lumpy's Gift, which is a children's book you've written, you were writing books on mythical creatures of Maine. And you're kind of into all that stuff, cryptozoology. So what's going on there? How did you get into that?
Well, that is the 10,000 $1,000 question for a science teacher turned children's author turned cryptozoologist. So cryptozoology is the study of mysterious, not yet known to science creatures and beings and other unusual happenings. I always kind of had an interest in that as a young person. And my family's from Maine out here on the right coast, and it's a lot of woods out here. My grandfather was a hunter, trapper, guide kind of fellow and ran some resort cabins for many years. And they were great storytellers, always spinning yarns about creatures and mysterious beings that they would meet while out on these hunts and guiding trips. And I always just sort of thought they were making it up. But then I learned there was this rich sort of folklore behind all of this that had been passed down for generations, not just in my family, but really the whole country, like throughout the so-called lumber woods, the northern forests, and, you know, anywhere people go out in the woods and tell stories and spend time. And I was just raised with a lot of stories of all sorts, humorous and whatnot. And I got sort of caught up in the threads of this folklore and the mystery of these creatures. And, you know, I just thought they were made up when I was young. And then I became an adult and found out they had, you know, sort of this long-term history that I thought people might like to hear about. And I was, as a young person, I was also interested in Bigfoot and Mothman and all of those types of things as well. And I sort of saw the connection and just became an obsession and turned into a book and became part of my performance storytelling that I do around the state as well. Not a guide myself, but a guide to stories and fictions that make us think about who we are and what the world is like.
Have you ever had a sighting of a cryptozoological creature?
I think the weirdest thing I saw that sort of, like, I was a teenager, and but I was with a friend, and we were sitting on my family dock on this lake by our cabin. And there was no substances or alcohol involved in this. We were just chatting in the evening, and these two glowing balls float along the shore, like through the woods, going behind trees, maybe 15 feet up in the air, and they looked like, I guess, the size of a basketball, and one in front of the other, a little offset in their height, and they just sort of, we both watched them go through, and we're both like, "Do you see that?" And you know, we both saw it, and it was a really amazing thing that, you know, it almost, like, and your mind does this thing where it turns these weird experiences, like, did that really happen? But, like, I know it happened because I experienced it with this other person. And so that's probably the weirdest thing I've seen. And I don't know if it wasn't a creature, but it was certainly something unknown and mysterious and goes along with sort of what, you know, our ancestors might have called the will-o'-the-wisp tradition, where, you know, don't follow the lights into the woods. And there's all sorts of great stories about that.
I always follow the lights in the woods, and I always make it out okay.
Yeah, that explains
sometimes
a lot.
I have a good time. Yeah, sometimes I have a good time.
Well, you got into being a science teacher, right?
Yeah.
So how much can be science, you know, and how much of it is, you know, in a way, aren't we really unsure about Bigfoot? We don't know. And there's been a number of years and over a long period of time where there's been rumors of Bigfoot and all that sort of stuff and that. But we don't really have any physical proof, do we?
No, which is why it's cryptozoological, it's Fortean, it's beyond the scope of science. And you know, I see all of this, like, interest in myself as being sort of like the gateway science, like, that led me to biology. I'm a biologist by training, and an interest in the world and discovering and learning about what's out there. And the thing I always remember is that science is in its modern form is at most like 200 years old. But our ancestors, who we love to underestimate, who lived for thousands of years before that, and indigenous people that get encountered by, you know, scientists trying to study animals in a new area, would always talk about, oh, there's moose and there's salmon and there's bear, and like this happens at this time of the year, and you got to watch out for the little people and the floating lights and the big hairy man and the water monsters, right? There are these shared creatures that our ancestors are always talking about, and they're
telling people about and saying they had experiences with. And so, you know, I think it's wrong to underestimate that value of that ancestral knowledge, that that idea that our ancestors in whatever culture you're from, like, had this relationship and understanding of what it meant to live in the world that involved these mysterious incidences and these now unknown creatures. And, you know, I can't explain to you how my cell phone gets all the information, but I know that it works. And so I wonder if there's some of this knowledge that our ancestors, having lived with a life that, like, literally depended on understanding nature, knew about these creatures, yet we, the way we do science, doesn't perceive them. You know, so is it cultural? Is it spiritual? Is it something that really doesn't fit into our modern scientific Western paradigm of culture and language? And I think it's probably a little bit of all of those things. And, you know, some stories are just made up. Some stories probably go to a deeper truth. And so that's kind of how I write it in my head. Just because we don't have evidence doesn't mean that it, you know, absence of evidence isn't evidence that it doesn't exist. But, you know, a good scientist says, well, there isn't evidence to indicate that they exist. So we don't have biological management plans for Bigfoot. But, you know, a lot of anecdotal evidence exists that says, you know, it's an important cultural phenomenon and maybe has reflections in a scientific way of looking at things that we don't yet understand. I don't know.
Drugs.
Could be drugs, too.
They were doing a lot of smoking. Well, it's interesting in that, but it's kind of on the edge. So, especially in today's world, right, there's so many conspiracies and weird stuff and people talking about all sorts of things that sometimes it goes further than you expect. What was kind of the most wild story that you ever had with any of these creatures?
Like, told to me by a person I met?
Yeah, one that you kind of, it stays with you today, that you still think about.
Yeah, so, I mean, you get told, like, you read a lot of stories, and then when you start going out and, like, telling these stories and collecting stories from people and talking about the stuff, people tell you all sorts of interesting things, and, you know, sometimes people tell you about, like, you know, abductions or by aliens, or like how there's like they're communicating with Bigfoot, and those are all kind of out there. And then sometimes people have these like where they're really shaken and they really saw something like out in the woods. And, you know, these people who are seasoned outdoors men and women, you know, come across something that like doesn't match up with anything they've expected before. So, you know, they saw something, but, you know, what did they see? What is related to that? Were there drugs involved? You know, sometimes, obviously, you know, or sometimes are they just spinning a story? Some of these stories are very well crafted. But I think there's so many experiences that some of them are real. I don't have a really good one that jumps to mind that, you know, sort of, you know, sticks out to me.
Well, so, and you're also dealing with, I guess there's, you know, when you hear this stuff, you get aliens and abductions and stuff like that. So it kind of ties in with that too, right? It's kind of another one that people quite often question.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And, you know, you know, if you look like 200 years ago, nobody was talking about aliens, but they certainly talked about like lights flying through the sky and like getting abducted by little people and like, you know, having experiences and they were never right again. And then today we don't hear about like, you know, fairy world abductions, but we do hear all the time about, you know, these alien abductions that, you know, tells us, you know, I mean, like, are these just like transferences of like how we interpret these experiences we have based on our culture, or are they just like catchy psychoses? You know, I guess it's up to, you know, however we want to understand that to be able to, you know, deal with these stories in the world. So, you know, I think they're more related than maybe we you know, we let on. I mean, the cultural implications of this and the fact that, like, we feel the need to tell these stories is important in some way. And I don't know exactly what it means, but I know that it's important. Story is really powerful. It's a way we hold our culture together and convey all that information. And, you know, it lets us see into our, you know, see behind the curtain in some ways, you know, while just staring at a screen or, you know, listening to a story.
Well, how do you balance out being a biologist and a school teacher with cryptozoology? Do you have to be careful? Do you get any pushback from, you know, mainstream scientists or school administrators, parents, stuff like that?
No, I mean, my big thing is I go around and I tell mostly traditional, you know, Northeastern folklore stories. I have a character and I do those performances. I also write about, like, modern experiences, which are people's stories and, you know, lumberjacks or guides having experiences. Those are few people feel pretty safe with, but then they get a little bit uncomfortable with, you know, when, you know, people start talking about these things that are beyond the scope of science. But the way I view it is, you know, it's, like I, you know, like I said earlier, it's a gateway science. It's something that, like, makes people wonder, it engages them, and then they start to study, you know, if you want to discover what's in the world, you have to study the world. And it, I think it naturally lends people to, like, start exploring what's out there. And sometimes it lends people to get into, like, really crazy headspace, but you know, I don't think the way that I don't get any pushback, because I'm always, you know, I am a scientist and, you know, I mean, I will say that we don't have the evidence to support these exist scientifically, but, you know, we have all this anecdotal cultural information and that sometimes leads to some really cool discoveries, like medicines from plants that are, you know, knowledge of people who've lived in areas for long, long periods of time, indigenous people, you know, so. I think it's all, like, about how you set perspective. If you go into this stuff and say it's like a conspiracy and people don't want you to know about this stuff and it's linked to this and, you know, and it takes you into crazy places, then that's what people, I think, have a problem with. And it can do that. Like, anything can do that. But it can also be a way of starting a great conversation or talking, getting people interested in going out in the woods or, you know, just sharing a good laugh. Some of the early lumberjack stories and my grandfather's guide stories are just hilarious. And some of the creatures they talk about are just absurd and, you know, clearly weren't something that people thought were real experiences, but told this important cultural information. And so I think it's about, like, how you set the perspective of, you know, what you're looking at. And if you keep a scientific mind and say, we can talk about culture and talk about society and talk about people's experience and not get, you know, our tinfoil hats all crinkled up, then we'll do okay.
I like mind crinkles.
Reflects more of the mind control rays that way.
Yeah, of course. You know, hey, listen, so when you're in this kind of lifestyle, okay, so you're telling these stories, you're into science, biology, you're doing teaching at school and all that stuff. What led you down the road to writing a kids book?
Yeah. So even before I was interested in, like, obsessively interested in these mysterious creatures, I sort of inherited this knack for spinning a yarn and telling stories and, like, getting in front of people and performing these stories, to some extent. And maybe I took it to more of an extent. And so for scout groups and church groups and things like that, I would tell, you know, stories or historical stories, or like mindfulness lessons. And in fact, like, Lumpy's Gift was written as a mindfulness lesson, which is something I also teach in my science classroom. We have Mindful Mondays. You know, there's curriculums about that. And it's about, you know, thinking about what we do and how we think about the world. And somebody contacted me and said, hey, I'd like to have this lesson teaching generosity and mindfulness. And, you know, the students, I want them to do, like, a craft. And can you put something together like that? And I said, yeah, I think I can. And so I ended up writing this book, Lumpy's Gift, but I didn't write it as a book. I wrote it as a story to be performed and told, And the, you know, Lumpy is a lump of clay and gets molded by all of his crazy experiences, like a well-meaning potter digging him up from his moist and warm, squishy dark hole and, you know, carries him in a bucket, and it's bright and dark and it's bright and like loud and bumpy, and he dumps him on the potter's wheel and spins him and presses him and thumps him and shapes him and does all sorts of terrible things until he fires him, and Lumpy feels crusty and then hard, and he notices that he's got a shape and a body, and he becomes a gift, right? Like, he becomes a cup. He gets transformed by all of his different experiences that he thought were terrible until he learned that they weren't. And so this story and like all of the big movements and the big, you know, dancing around and like funny voices that you do during the performances of these, you know, get people like out of their normal headspace to think about like, oh, wow, like there are things in my life that are hard and transform me and I can become better. And then they made this gift, like this thing out of clay, like they were playing with clay while I was telling this story. And then they ended up like shaping these objects. And then the teacher of this class took these objects and fired them in a kiln, and then they came back the next week and they had this little gift that they made that they got to give to somebody, and they got to think about how all the things in their life, you know, transformed them into something they never thought they wanted to be when they just wanted to stay in their dark, moist and squishy hole.
So when you write a book for kids, like the Lumpy's Gift, for instance, do you have a meaning or some sort of purpose behind it? Is there something you hope the kids pick up from it other than just the entertainment or the fun of the book?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the only way. Like, I'm like, despite my really weird interests, like, I'm a really practical person. So if you give me like a blank page and you're like, come and tell a story about whatever you want, I'm like, I have no idea what to tell a story about. I know hundreds of stories that I can perform, you know, or at least, you know, probably 100. And, you know, but I will never come up, you know, it would be really, that would be painful for me. And so I love to have a theme, or, you know, somebody needs something. And that's what stories are supposed to do. They're supposed to convey, you know, some type of meaning, especially children's stories or like these, you know, stories that we tell, like that's how we share our culture with each other, whether it's a TV show or a novel or a children's book. You know, all of that implicitly or explicitly teaches a story. And then for kids, it's really important to get, you know, these interests and have these stories, and then, you know, have a way for, you know, so my book has this discussion guide that lets them sort of, you know, guides the reader today or the teller or the classroom leader about what, you know, what would be a good lesson for the kids to pull out of this. But it was because they wanted something about, you know, being mindful and making a gift and transformation that really helped me to come up with that story. I totally love having a theme, and that's the best way to write a children's story. And a lot of the creature stories tell lessons about not going into the woods, or, you know, think about like all the common tropes of novels and TV shows and horror movies. Like, there are certain messages that we're conveying in there that, you know, whether we realize it or not, that are about being cautious and trusting people and, you know, and who's going to die first, I guess, in horror movies or whatever. I don't know.
How does it work for you? Like, when you write a book like this, what do you yourself get out of it?
Oh, that's a good one. It's all about community for me. I mean, the most, like, nobody goes through life and thinks like, you know, maybe some people do, but I certainly don't. Like, I wish, you know, I never had to deal with, you know, any people, and I didn't have a community or people that I cared about, or like nobody ever did anything interesting. Like, everybody wants these connections with other people. So, you know, stories are simple ways where we can open pathways of communication with other people. And I love that exchange where I give them my performance, they give attention, and then we get connection out of this at the end. And not just with me, but the people who listen to the story together, even if it's like in a public place, they get melded into, you know, a community as well, you know, like just even if it's temporary, like we're in these places together, but it's so easy to never notice anybody around us. And story is just a, you know, like I love it when you just like meet somebody and they just tell you something in the checkout line or whatever. And you're like, oh, that was a good little story. Like you just shared a little snippet and it brings people together. And I think if more people talked and like had these simple things and didn't look for, like we're so often looking for entertainment, but you know, if we connect with people who are in front of us, that is a really powerful thing. And in some ways, like writing a book is like having a conversation, you know, and creating this shared culture that then other people can talk about and have common ground to discuss as well. So even if, you know, the story is being conveyed through TV or radio or through a book, like that is building community as well as building culture and society. And so that's what I get out of it. I feel like it's like making the world a better way, like especially if it's kids, but even if it's for adults, like that's a shared thing that we can all talk about and come together with.
So what have you got coming up next? Like what comes out now? You've done a little bit of cryptozoology and you're doing a children, you've done the children's book. So what's going to come out next for you?
Well, if I could settle on working on one project at a time, it would definitely help me. But I have a bunch of children's books that, you know, I've written for stories, you know, storytelling that I would love to see like Lumpy become children's books. I'm also working on collecting more, you know, New England folklore and creating, you know, other books about, you know, more familiar creatures involving their folklore or even, you know, other legends and things like that. So I'm working on all that. I don't have anything, you know, right in the stable ready to go. I also do a lot of like event organization where I put together like authors fairs and I put together, you know, cryptozoology conferences. I got one of those coming up in April through the International Cryptozoology Conference. Which brings people together from all over the world and all over the country to hear, you know, experts and TV personalities. And so just, you know, architecting little projects like that that bring people together are also things that I spend a lot of time writing about and talking about, and there are ways to get those stories out. But, you know, more of the same for me, teaching science by day and telling stories by night.
So what goes on at these places, these shows that you do, these speeches or these, you know, conferences, I should say, what goes on? Like what can someone expect if they go to a conference of cryptozoology and stuff and what you speak to?
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of like any kind of like trade show or expo. You know, if you went to an author's event, there would be authors at tables and vendors and there would be speeches and I organize those, you know, ordinary types of things as well. But also like at the cryptozoology conference, there's going to be, Pat Spain, which is he's a biologist who's a cryptozoologist. He goes all over the world. He's done like National Geographic shows and he's done Travel Channel shows about like legend exploring and monster hunting and things like that. And so he'll be talking and Lauren Coleman, who is the founder of the International Cryptozoology Museum, is going to be talking and I'll be doing some storytelling and talking and, people are coming in, you know, Dave, there's some people coming in from Florida to talk and, you know, about Bigfoot and about sea serpents and about how Lovecraftian fiction ties in with all of that stuff. And so there will be talks and there will be film screenings and we've got like live reptiles for a fundraiser from this, you know, herpetological rescue center called Herphaven that's local out here, and all sorts of, you know, just things that are interesting that make people connect and bring people together. Tons of vendors. People can buy Bigfoot prints and keychains and all the other oddities that you might imagine would be at such a show.
Well, that's interesting. Do you have any live Bigfoots there too?
Well, we do have, we're screening this film called Big Fur, Dan Walker, this award-winning, international award-winning taxidermist, decided that he wanted to create a life-size realistic taxidermy replica of sort of the most famous, like, Bigfoot footage. You've probably seen it. It's called the Patterson-Gimlin film, and it's like Bigfoot walking through a river valley, and he's made Patty from Bluff Creek there, and it's extremely realistic. And so he's gonna be busing about as real of a Bigfoot as you can get into a conference out there, and see that. And it's pretty remarkable. So not exactly what you said, but sort of.
Well, that's all right. I'm just, you know, checking it out.
That's a fair question.
What's going on.
That would be for the best conference ever if somebody unveils an actual Bigfoot.
Yeah. I'm just checking. I just want to know what I'm going to get.
Yeah, you should come out.
Well, I don't know. They might, you know, they might mistake me for a Bigfoot. No, I guess I don't have enough hair, and I'm certainly not big enough, and I'm only a size 9 in the feet, so no, I guess not.
You're a ways away.
Yeah, I'm really a ways away. Yeah, I'll tell you. You know, that'd be a field trip. So now, are you doing social media? Do you have social media, and do you have a website and all that for people to come find you?
I sure do. So my website, which is due for an overhaul with my new book coming out, is www.christopherpackard.com. And I have probably I'm most active on Facebook and Instagram. And on Facebook, I'm at CS Packard. Which is where you just look up Christopher Packard, and you'll find me. And on Instagram, I'm at c.s.packard.
Wow. So you're all around.
All around.
Well, we appreciate you being here. Glad you came on. Good little talk about your new book. Now, the book we're talking about is Lumpy's Gift, and our guest is the author of that, Christopher Packard. So thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. This is a great conversation.
Thanks, Christopher.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.